A moment of silence for Jim Ryan. Hello and welcome to Triangle Square, the PlayStation podcast. I'm your host, Brett Beck, and alongside me is the one and the only Mr. Chris Figgs. Chris, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, just dandy. How are you, Brett?
I'm doing well. In case anyone's worried, Jim Ryan did not die. He's just retired. We don't know if it was forcefully or, you know, voluntarily or whatever, but he's retired and left PlayStation. So we'll get to talking about that in a little bit. First and foremost, welcome to the show. If you are new to it, welcome. This is a podcast where we talk about PlayStation or we talk about really the games industry from the lens of people who are primarily PlayStation fans, though we do play any and all of the systems where and when we see a game that looks interesting or something like that. So we like to say that we give a fair shake, both in compliments and not so nice things to anyone who needs or deserves it, but we're not trying to necessarily come in here and console bash. So hopefully that sounds about your speed. If you have been listening to the show, you may notice I'm probably a little quieter and a little different sounding than usual. I woke up this morning after being, we took last week off because I had some stuff going on. And then I woke up this morning to my throat feeling like needles were stabbing it. And I didn't want to cancel the show again. So with that in mind, I'm going to go ahead and get out of the way. This will be a shorter episode. I need to try and minimize how much I'm talking so that I can try and keep whatever strength I have in my voice. And Chris has been so kind as to say that was no problem. So, Chris, thank you. Sure. We, of course, will get to talking about what we've been playing as we always start the show off with. But there's not a lot going on today. We're going to get into talking about some state of play rumors or maybe even a PlayStation showcase, depending on how you feel about what Jeff Grubb has to say. There is some PlayStation Plus essential games that we need to talk about. There's some games that we have learned will be hitting PlayStation Plus day and date that we'll talk about. There's a little bit of Helldivers 2 cleanup. And of course, as we mentioned already, Jim Ryan is out and about. He's left PlayStation. So we'll get into those soon. But first, we're going to get to doing what we always do and checking in on what each other has been playing so that we can give you, the listener, a chance to either hear about a game that you didn't know about that may be on your radar now, to potentially warn you of a game that was on your radar that after hearing us talk about it, you may find that it doesn't sound up your alley, or to scare you away completely from a game that you already knew you hated. With that in mind, Chris, what have you been playing, man? We've had a good two-week break here, so you've had plenty of time to delve into bunch of games while you were technically unemployed.
Yes, employed? I was unemployed with a job. It was sick. Yeah, so I switched jobs and I had like 11 days off.
Jealous.
So I took advantage of that by beating one video game. So, with that said, I have finished Final Fantasy VII Remake.
There you have it.
Yep.
Finally.
It's done. It's great. It's a fantastic game. Great ending. It's a good game. I don't know what else to really say about it. It was funny because I was messaging you and I was like, dude, all I want to play is fucking Rebirth, but I can't. So now I'm playing through Final Fantasy VII. And
well, let's expound on why you felt like you couldn't.
I don't think I can expound on why. I think I shouldn't, actually.
Well, let me say this spoilers. Much. For anyone who doesn't know at this point, I think we'd be doing a public service at this point to tell you that Final Fantasy VII Remake is not actually aiming to be a one-for-one remake. It is choosing to take some liberties and have some fun with the events as people who have played the game in the past know them and still be good for people who may be coming around to it for the first time. So there's a lot of similar and there's a lot of different.
If you need to cut this, feel free, but this is a sequel. It is not a remake. That is my feeling on it. It's a full-fledged sequel. I can't go into why I think it's a full-fledged sequel, but it's a full-fledged sequel.
And I love that you say it's your take on it. It's what you feel because I'm very curious to see how that shifts depending on whenever you get around to Rebirth. But for now, Chris has decided he wants to go and play the original Final Fantasy VII
yes.
so that he can see where they've decided to take liberties and make changes mm-hmm. and have a better point of context.
Yeah, the most shocking change of all for me was the fact that it took me about 15 minutes to beat Final Fantasy VII Remake in Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, and to clarify for anyone who's like, what? First of all, yeah, it's not very long to begin with in the original game. And second of all, Chris is playing with the speed stuff on and all sorts of stuff. So Chris is playing, let's just call it what it is. Chris is playing a version to get story events specifically, more so than he's worried about playing the game as you would have originally played it.
Yeah, I'm not playing for the experience. I'm playing for the story. Because, you know, but even with that, I spent 40 hours playing Final Fantasy VII Remake, and then let's call it an hour of gameplay yeah. was that whole game. So that was pretty shocking to me, but it's cool just seeing stuff. Like, I think I messaged you and I was like, dude, I just got to the hand puzzle, and it's not a puzzle, but it's really cool that this is here.
Yeah.
Like, that kind of stuff was neat, like going backwards. You know, I've always been the weird person where it's like, I was someone where, not that I did this, but if I was going to play the Last of Us 2 first, like, for me, the Last of Us 1 just operates as a prologue, so it really doesn't bother me at all going yeah. that way. It's just, you know, that's why I always say, like, don't play Yakuza 0 first. That's really stupid. Because a lot of the payoff for that game is finding out why Majima has been this way for 7 games, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I'm a big fan of saying that for Kingdom Hearts, you know, like, a lot of people mm-hmm. look and be like, well, does that mean I should play Kingdom Hearts in release or like in release order or timeline order? And I'm like, anyone who tells you to play the Kingdom Hearts games in timeline order, what the fuck are they telling you?
Right.
It's so much better because it was made to be, it was made to be played in release order because they hope you're playing it as they're coming out. And that means that that's the optimal way. Like, sure, you can play it in timeline order, but you're not going to really benefit from it. And if anything, some of the older games that have got rougher edges, you're going to have a harder time wanting to interact with when you've played the newer that has smoothed some of those edges.
Yeah.
Like, I love Kingdom Hearts 1, and I still think it's a better game than Kingdom Hearts 2. And I know that's debatable from a lot of people. And I love Kingdom Hearts 2. It's not a hit. But I could see someone having problems going back to Kingdom Hearts 1, definitely before the remaster, because old school Kingdom Hearts 1, you couldn't use the analog stick to move the camera. You had to use L2 and R2, which was hugely different. When you go up to chest, it doesn't automatically pop you to triangle to open them. You had to go down to the bottom of your command menu and hit open. And it's just a bunch of small quality of life changes, as well as combat being a lot more difficult and a lot more traditional in an RPG sense. I think you play those games as they're released, and you get to see now how not only the characters have evolved, but how they've decided to evolve the gameplay throughout that time period as well. And I think that's true of Yakuza 0, because like Yakuza 0 mm-hmm. still plays in a very different way than Yakuza 1 does. You know.
Right, yeah.
It's, no, not Kiwami. It plays a real similar to Kiwami, but...
Yeah, there's levels to what I'm saying. You know, I wouldn't recommend you start with Shadow of the Tomb Raider and then go backwards up to the PS1 games. You know, I think there's certain levels to it, but even in this scenario, it's just... I guess that's kind of actually exactly what I did, because I played Remake and then Final Fantasy VII, but it's just, you know, as long as you can deal with the gameplay, and I don't think the gameplay in Final Fantasy VII is bad. It just doesn't... No. It doesn't tell you some things I wish it did. But other than that, I'm fine. I didn't realize you could defend until like 15 hours into my gameplay.
Yeah, there was a few
like, you have revelatory to scroll over,
statements that you came and I'm across. Like,
what the hell? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, that's good.
Switching I'm glad characters. You're... I had no idea.
Yeah. All right. So with that in mind, you got a few other games here. We both hopped onto some Helldivers too.
We did. We played some Helldivers. Still great.
I finally got the platinum 42 hours in.
Yeah. I couldn't sleep, and I like looked, because I hopped off yesterday after we were playing, and I couldn't sleep, and I was like, oh, he's still playing Helldivers. He's not stopping until he gets that platinum. I was like, there's no way he's stopping.
Did you just and that's run why I had the sore throat.
Yeah.
No, we ran medium or easy. We didn't do trivial, didn't do far. At that point, I was just trying to knock out quick missions where quite literally, it's so funny playing that game because yesterday at lunch, I decided to hop on and knock out some missions, and I did hop on a trivial by myself because mm-hmm. I never played trivial, really. I've always played the game with people, and I was quickly playing it like challenging and up. And with that in mind, I didn't even like, I never did the mission where you raise the flags. I did it for the first time yesterday.
Really?
And they're kind of terrible. I think it's a terrible objective. It's really slow and pointless, but that's because I'm so good at the game at this point that it's kind of pointless. I kill everything immediately and then I'm just waiting for 10 minutes while a flag raises.
Yeah. That was what was funny about playing Trivial, because I did that too yesterday, just trying to get some samples. And it was like, there's no enemies in this map. Like,
there's none. Like, that's what it feels like.
I don't know what's happening.
But that in mind, whenever I hopped on for lunch yesterday, I forgot to turn it private. I was going to do it myself so I could drop, complete the objective, go. Because like a lot of the objectives on Trivial and Easy are like eliminate the – they're things that become side – objectives and harder difficulties. So it's like eliminate the illegal broadcast, and you can just choose to drop right on it, throw two grenades on it, and run to extraction, and you're done. Like, that's it.
Nice.
So it's like I don't even bother putting the code in, because you can just throw two grenades and destroy any illegal broadcast tower. Or if you have an airstrike, you can just blow it up and run. But I had like three people all join me, and I didn't realize what level they were until we completed the mission. And it was like a level 2, a level 4, and a level 5. And I was like, I should do what I always wish people would do in these games. And so I put my headset on and I slowed down a little bit, and I explained things to them and gave them tips and tricks about the game that they did not know. Explain to them the importance of things like samples, not gamer reloading so you don't waste, different ways that you can do stuff like the sound design for when you're doing the broadcast tower or whatever, the satellite, whatever it's called, where you can align it. I was like, you can do this by yourself, and explaining that to them. And it was really rewarding, because they all were on chat with me and they were all like, oh, I didn't know. I didn't know this. I didn't know that. And you get a little bit of a God complex going for you, because like I did a medium mission just to kind of show them that you can go up. And there was a mission where it was like destroy a Hulk.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, that's not too bad. But I was like, you know, this is a big robot. It can kill y'all. Be careful. And then I got there and they were like, and I kind of just let them shoot for a few minutes. And they were like, oh, dude, this thing's kicking my ass. This is so hard. And then I just called down the fucking precision strike that one-shots everything. And they were like, what the fuck? They were like, you just made that shit look so easy.
I was laughing while you were talking, because that you said something that put into context something you said last night, like very slightly annoyed me. We were doing the exact side mission you were talking about. You're like, you know, there's an audio cue. I just went, yeah, but you're fucking right there.
Yeah, and I get you. Here's the thing. As I was playing that game that day, I'd been playing with, I played for like 2 hours at various points with random people who were new.
That's what I'm saying. So the it explains that why you said it, because you were at the terminal and you're like, you know, there's an audio cue. And I'm like, but you're sitting at the terminal. Just tell me when to stop. Yeah. What are you saying to me?
Yeah, no, and that's perfectly fine. But it's one of those things where like different people I've been playing with, even at high difficulties, they didn't know you could do that by yourself. And yeah. I was just like, this is more of a PSA than me saying do it by yourself. Like, I'll definitely tell you. But just so you know, if you're ever playing solo or with a group of people that you don't want to communicate with.
Yeah. Well, you also know how our video game guru is sometimes. So
oh, I'm sure Sean has told you everything I could say.
Like, come on. It's basic.
Yeah. So that's good, though. I'm glad to have had the platinum finally for it. I quite enjoy the game. I'm ready to give it a slight backseat while I try and focus on some other games now. But go ahead. What else have you been playing? Because you got a big list here.
Yeah, I got a big list, but it's half a joke for your benefit. But I'll read it out. So I got the platinum in MLB 24 The Show.
Nice. Thank you. Look at that.
That was very easy. It got to a point where like it was one of those things where I could get it at any point. Because it's not hard. It's incredibly easy. So I got to the end of my vacation, and I'm like, my unemployment. I'm like, well, I should probably get one platinum for these 11 days. Go ahead, just knock that out.
Yeah,
that was super easy.
Speaking of trophies, quick little cleanup here. The trophy competition is ongoing. And it was funny because Blake hit the Trophy Talk Discord and was like, since all these giant RPGs have come out, these trophies have slowed considerably, which is absolutely true.
Very true.
So we got our monthly update thanks to a one-armed wolf, one of our patrons, and who graciously decided to help keep up with this course. I am still in the lead by a very narrow margin because I did not get a platinum the entire month of March. I did get some trophies, but I'm happy
with mine.
Yeah, yeah, you're not a bad spot. Not a bad spot at all, Chris. You're still third, right?
Yeah. It's falling off.
Blake coming in and just destroying everybody with his simulator games.
I don't know why people didn't believe me. I said that was good. The moment he bought a PS5, I was like, oh, we're cooked. We're cooked. Yeah. It's over.
I knew, Chris. You didn't have to convince me. But
people, I don't know if people in Discord believed me. I'm like, I've seen this man do things that I don't understand.
So. Yeah, we're cooked until someone decides to offer him a piece of bubblegum for his PS5. Then you're like, that's when it gets to the point where we got to be like, okay. Whew.
Once Blake messages me and goes, hey, I'm thinking about getting the Minecraft platinum. That's when it's over. But yeah, in terms of the competition,
that's just code now.
Yeah,
exactly. Code for I'm about to sell my console.
Yeah, I've just I've reaffirmed my interest in going back and playing all the Final Fantasies, and making at least a small attempt to give them all a platinum. So the rest of my list is Final Fantasy VIII, Final Fantasy XIV, Final Fantasy XII, Final Fantasy I, and Final Fantasy IX. I've tried.
It's funny that you're doing this because longtime fans of the show, here's your little update on what Saul's been up to and what he's been playing. He's been playing the Final Fantasy games in the same capacity through on his Steam Deck, and he recently beat Final Fantasy I for the first time in a long time, and he's on Final Fantasy II. And I was telling you about him playing Final Fantasy VII with a bunch of mods that make that game look insane while still retaining the heart of what that game is. So yeah, he's been going through it and it's been really, really interesting. He's also been playing Stranger of Paradise since that ties in with one.
Yeah.
So it's been interesting.
That same thing. I have a list on my PS5 now that's just weeb shit I want to play, and it's just every Final Fantasy game. But you know what's interesting? I was having this debate with myself in the car. It's funny because I'm trying to fill in holes and gaps in my video game knowledge. And by doing so, I'm just creating gaps in my video game knowledge. Like, I find it super weird, right? Because in 30 years, someone's going to look at me and go, did you ever play Dragon's Dogma 2? I'm looking at them.
You're like, nah, bro, I was too busy playing Final Fantasy 1.
Right, exactly. Facts. Like, dude, what happened here?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like eventually you only have so much time. So you're always, even to clear up back games that you never got to play, you're inevitably going to miss out of something. That's a big deal. It's just the way it goes.
I just wonder if it's better to do it forward or backwards, right? Like, do I want to finish my PS3 collection, play most of these games, but lack on the PS5? Or do I want to just play every PS5 game? I buy every PS5 game, so I might as well play every PS5 game.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can't necessarily have your cake and eat it too, but you can have your cake and like run your fingers across the icing one day and then drink your soda the next day and then take a big bite the next day out of your cake. So, you know, you can have your cake for a lot longer and still eat it.
Yeah. As long as someone looks at my trophies, I could show them my game library and be like, yeah, I've played almost everything that's ever existed. Look, it's all right here.
That's how you get there. I'll run through mine real quick. Of course, I'm on Rebirth still, and I've been playing a lot of Helldivers with Donovan and working towards Platinum and other stuff, just having a good time with the game. And Rebirth, I unfortunately, at the very end of the game, and I'm pretty sure I was on the final fight of the final series of fights that all JRPGs do, where it's like, oh, this big epic thing happened. Now 14 permutations of this big epic thing will continue to happen. And I got to what I'm pretty sure was the last one, died, and I've seen people complaining about this and never ran into the problem until the very end of the game, where the way that it chooses to explain its retry options are ridiculous, and it impacts you the most at the end, because you'd almost think that the first option should always be retry from the absolute closest spot you can let me retry from, and then if I want to deviate from that, those can be my other options. But that's not what it is at the end of Final Fantasy VII. So I hit the wrong button and I had to restart from the very beginning of that entire gauntlet. And I just got pissed and I couldn't bring myself to do it. So instead, I finally started Resistance Retribution, which has been sitting on my console ever since I downloaded Banishers. So I was like, fuck it, I'm playing Resistance. So I'm a good, you know, couple hours into Resistance Retribution. I still love that game. It's a simple game. It's a PSP game. Take it for what it is. I love it. I love looking back at the way game design was at that era and what was important and what wasn't and how much of that has stayed true and how much of it is wildly deviated. So yeah, I'm having a blast with that. And then I decided to hop in today, before we got on the show, to the Stellar Blade demo. I did download it last night, but ended up playing Helldivers with you boys. So I was like, I really want to play the Stellar Blade demo, which is rare. I don't usually play demos, but Stellar Blade is this game that's kind of off and on looked great, but I've had little worries about. And Chris, I got to tell you, after playing the demo, I think it's impossible that you selected a dud as part of your Metacritic draft. It's impossible. I will be vastly surprised if this game doesn't get very high sevens or low eights from my very small experience of playing it. It has so many vibes, and I don't mean this as a detriment for you. It could be. But it's doing a lot of its own things, but it clearly takes a lot of design inspiration and vibe inspiration and tone inspiration from Nier Automata, which is no surprise. It looks very Nier-like in the trailers. But I was a little surprised that the combat almost goes a little bit more... It's like a more action-heavy Souls-like setup to where, you know, you have a lot of parry stuff, which is, that's not really fair to say, because, I mean, like, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth has got a lot of parry and dodge stuff, but it's got, like, perfect dodge timers, parry, and all of this is in Nier Automata, but it just feels represented differently in a way that it's a little hard to say. So this kind of feels like what Lies of P was for the Soulsborne genre. This is what this kind of feels like. This is Nier Automata's Lies of P, a completely different game that has no qualms at being like, yeah, we clearly have a lot of inspiration from this other game we love.
Yeah. I haven't played the demo yet. I heard there was some Sekiro vibes and that got me very interested.
There are some Sekiro vibes, yeah. The game definitely does want you to mindfully parry. And it definitely wants you to mindfully perfect dodge. And it does a lot of the same things where, like, sometimes you'll get telegraphed things where it's like, you can't dodge this or you can't block this. You have to dodge it. So a lot of that's in. I think there's a decent chance that you'll like it. But
I'm looking forward
to it.
You're
steeping yourself in Japanese games right now. So I think you're softening your ability to like it by experiencing other things, which is good. You know, it's like you're going to be in a better spot to be able to like it because I think you're getting a little more familiar with Japanese games. I think it's starting to set more of an expectation within you for them. And I know you've had them, but you yourself have been one to say, like, it takes a really weird, like, I'm surprised that in this 11 days you didn't try and, like, fucking Persona 5 Royal again or something like that, because that's usually the period, which you did. You played Remake, a game that you couldn't beat last time because you eventually fell off of it. Mm-hmm. And you've said many times that you would have fallen off of Persona 5 Royal had it not been for COVID.
Yeah, definitely. And that's
my thing. You would have regretted that if you know. Yeah, so
the podcast would be a different podcast. But it's funny because I don't think I've ever come on the show and disliked a JRPG I've played. Like Tales of Arise, I came on here and said I liked, sure. You know.
But you tend not to beat them.
I just don't finish them. Exactly it. It's like, I remember Arise, I got halfway through and then something happened in the story and I'm like, I don't want to do this anymore. You know, and that's how it's.
Well, Chris, I'll tell you, I kind of, in a way, I respect the fact that you were pretty willing to just quit a game because it's just not doing it for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate that because I think a lot of people have this fear of like, well, I invested this much time or this much money or both into this. And even though I'm not feeling this, I feel like I owe it to the fact that I spent my money on this instead of something else. And I have to keep playing this. And I think it's completely reasonable and fine for you to be like, yeah, I wanted to play God of War Ragnarok and then this happened and I didn't like it, so I just quit playing it. I appreciate that because it does speak to the fact that you have the ability to buy something else and play something else and still have fun. And not everyone has that. Some people literally do buy God of War Ragnarok and go, this is what I spent my $70 on for the next 3 months. So, I mean, I better fucking like it.
Yeah.
I mean, and you're just like, fuck it. I'll spend $70 on something else that I look that looks like I'll like it more.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously there are degrees to that. I'm not a millionaire.
Of course.
But it does.
Of course.
It's just one of those things for me. It's like, especially in, you know, that God of War situation. God of War is a bad example because I bought the collector's edition. But, you know, let's say yeah. with, I don't know, Persona 3, right? Because I haven't finished that yet. I haven't even really played it. To me, it's like the money's already spent, so I'm not going to waste my time too. It's like I don't buy, I buy things digitally 90% of the time because of you. So I'm like, all right, well, it's the money's already there. Hopefully Brett plays it and likes it. That's just as simple as that at this point.
Yeah, and it's funny how many times you've bought something for you. And then yeah. I end up being like, oh, this game kicked ass. You're like, I didn't even finish it or play it.
Yeah. Like, even, I mean, even Helldivers, like, I've fallen off that game and kind of forced myself to play it sometimes. Not, it's not a bad game. I just, like Brett said, I'm in a Final Fantasy mode and people are like, let's shoot bugs. And I'm like, no, I'd rather hit them with a sword.
yeah, for
you
sure.
You know? Yeah, for me, it's just a matter of, hey, the money's spent, whatever. I'm not going to get mad about this. They're not going to refund me, so.
For sure. All right, Chris. So let's use that as a way to springboard off into a little bit of the news we have here. So the first thing here we have, and something else to note, I did not do community stake today. I went into work late because I slept poorly. I woke up late. I almost didn't go to work. I decided to. I've had a long day. So forgive the fact that this is a shorter episode, but that's beneficial for me. So instead of doing community stake, where we normally ask you guys a question that you can, we look for feedback either about something we talked about or just something gaming related, and it gives you a chance to push back on us or give us a new perspective, which we get often, definitely in the YouTube comments. So thank you to those who do that. Instead, this week, we're going to go ahead and jump directly in the news. The first thing here is, according to Jeff Grubb, a PlayStation Showcase or State of Play is on the calendar for May. He said this in reference to the potential game show and the PlayStation exclusive horror title Silent Hill 2. He says, quote, I've heard that there will be a PlayStation something, either a State of Play or a Showcase, next month in May. So this is probably going to be there, quote. He said, quote, I've learned both a Showcase and maybe State of Play, Grubb added. It seems like it might lean towards Showcase. It definitely in that time frame of when they did Showcase last year. So, you know, it kind of feels like he's getting told things that seem reasonable. The time frame seems to line up. So I think he's mixing the fact that he's hearing things from people he trusts and a little bit of logic. We've seen this in the past. So where there's smoke, there's fire, most likely. Mm-hmm. Except for when people just have a smoke machine and you're like, ah, oh, you bastards. But, you know, that's
it. I stopped, dropped, and rolled.
I saw smoke and I lost it. Missy Elliott said music make me lose control, and not at all.
It was the large fire.
It was the plumes of smoke that led me to believe that my impending doom was near.
Exactly.
So, yeah, this checks out. I think this makes sense. But I struggle to go with this thing of, like, where exactly, or what exactly, rather, is going to be here. And I think it seems reasonable. Like, Stellar Blade seems unlikely because it comes out by the end of this month. So there's that. So that won't be included. So what does that leave? Does that leave Silent Hill 2? Does that leave Metal Gear Solid 3? And then things like maybe Fair Games and the other game that I forget the name of, Concord. Do you think that's enough, or do you think that in that we'll also get some more third-party, second-party deals that we just haven't heard about yet?
I mean, we'll definitely get more third-party, second-party deals, but unless I'm mistaken, doesn't the Final Fantasy 16 DLC come out around there?
Sure. That's probably something else I can throw in. Yeah.
That'll be there. The Vincent DLC will probably be there. Like, you know, all of this kind of stuff seems very obvious. So, to me, anyway.
Yeah. I think we're probably not as close to a Vincent DLC as you think.
Oh, I mean, yeah, most likely. But
that's probably a December, like, Game Awards. I could see that.
Yeah. I mean, Ghost of Tsushima 2, I would be shocked if it's not announced this year.
That's a real curiosity, is where do they find the line of announcing some of their first party story driven games? Because they've already said that they're not going to be coming out this year, and that's fine. But when do they go, it's close enough for us to at least announce it? Mm-hmm. They've been scared in the past, but, you know, expectations are a lot different than they were back then. Do you think they'll be a little more willing to announce and be like, as long as it comes out within a year ish or do you think they're going to go back to the Spider-Man 2 thing where it's like, we're just teasing it, we're just saying it exists and we won't go too far into detail, and that way we can have it be 2 years and it won't matter?
No, I think it's a next year game, me personally. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Ben there, we saw Sucker Punch, even Santa. I think if we're going to look, to me, it would be, if I was running this show and all these games were ready, and I'm not pulling this out of my ass like I am, right? I would show Ghost, because Ghost is for next year. I would show Concord, Silent Hill, Metal Gear, Final Fantasy 16 DLC, Spider-Man DLC for this year, and then I would end the show with Sony Santa Monica, Naughty Dog, and then that's all I would do. It'd be like 2024, 25, 26, and beyond. There you go.
Yeah. Do you think that this is where we get reacquainted with Wolverine?
That's a very good point. I wouldn't even be shocked by gameplay. I mean, there's rumors that it's this year, there's rumors that it's next year, there's rumors that it doesn't exist. So,
you mean from a release standpoint? I think that a lot of people jumped on the thing of saying, well, there's going to be no games this year from Sony's first party or whatever, besides games as a service ones. And I think that that's not really fair to what was said. If I recall the quote correctly, it was that there will be no sequels to existing franchises. And that does mean that something like a new game from someone that might be ready can release this year. I'm very dubious of it. I do think Sony kind of, whether they regret so or not, who knows? And I use that not to push my own language on there, but there have been conflicting reports about how Sony feels about how they internally handled shifting so strongly to games as a service. And there's conflicting reports on whether or not they've completely divested, partially divested, if they've not divested at all, but they've spread the calendar. It's really hard to get a feel on exactly where Sony is as far as games as a service go. Well, but what look, I think is at least clear is that they are leaning on whether they wanted to or not, this year got set up to be games as a servicey, and they were trying to probably give a break to their single player games and then just have a couple of partnerships just so you still have that PlayStation's king mentality, right?
No, I don't think that's even it. I think all they were saying in that quote is 2022, you had God of War, 23. Do I have my dates right? Yeah, 23, you had Spider-Man. Our shareholders are not getting a bump like that this year. That's all the quote was.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not reading crazy into it either.
No, I know you're not, but I'm saying like the quote was more saying, hey, you're not getting Spider-Man 3 in 24. You're not getting The Last of Us 3 in 24. It's not like they said, oh, by the way, Ben's new IP isn't coming out, and the small indie title from Media Molecule that'll be announced at the PlayStation Showcase is coming out. You know, it's not like they said that. All they were saying was, hey, we got a lot of money from Spider-Man. It's not going to happen this year. That's all it was.
Yeah, and that's an interesting one because it's like it's a double setup, right? It's, well, hey, no sequel, so we're not going to see the same spike in income, but we're also not going to see the same spike in operating costs, realistically, because those games have very specific budgets and expectations that Sony's willing to lean into. And I think there's every right to believe that Fair Games and Concord will be well-budgeted games, but I don't think it's crazy to think that they won't be given The Last of Us 2 and Spider-Man budgets, because they are unknown quantities, but they still want them to reach a certain quality level. And I expect they're high-budget games, but not in the sense of that you would expect from any of these other things, you know?
Yeah.
So,
I would like to see this.
Sony seems to have mostly always done a pretty good job in making sure that their sales expectations are relatively in line with the budget they give to a game. Days Gone is a really weird example to where, outside looking in, I see it as really hard from how well that game seemingly did for that game to have not made any money. But I also don't know cost of living in Bend, so maybe that's just a difference. You know, I mean, a studio like Gunfire Games or whatever, or a studio like Blue Point, let's use them. Blue Point's out of Austin. Texas has a drastically lower cost of living, even in its big metropolitan areas, in comparison to a lot of places. And so it's probably a lot cheaper to make a game at Blue Point than it would be to make a game of the same scale with the same team at certain areas. I don't know enough about the varying local economies, but I was very surprised that Bend seemed to just either not make money at all or not make enough to where Sony was unwilling to trial again. But go ahead.
No, it's a little bit separate from this, but I had a game development studio like 10 minutes up the road. They made these niche like CRPG PC games, but it was like Firefly Games. They're based out of Canton, Connecticut. It's pretty cool.
That is cool. I've always wished I'd have lived closer to any of those. I mean, arguably the closest one. I mean, I guess if you look at it this way, I can't remember the name of the place where it started, but where John Carmack and everybody started at, and when they started doing Doom and revolutionizing PC gaming and creating a PC build of Mario and all that, was in Shreveport, which is an hour away from here.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Should go see the garage. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and it's funny, it was just a little PC software company they worked at that was just like, yeah sure.
Those guys were small. I never did this, but they were small enough where I wonder what would have happened if I just walked in the front door and went, hey, I like your games. Can I see what's going on here?
Yeah, I mean, the reality is probably no, but they might be like, but we're so fucking thankful.
Well, yeah, I mean, probably no, but it's like, you guys are so small. You get a free t-shirt. Publish your own games, like,
yeah, right? They give you a free t-shirt, and they're just like, cool, dude, thanks. We appreciate you.
Yeah, it's interesting to me, because
there's a free copy of this game. Which one do you not have?
definitely not all of them.
Yeah. It's interesting because, you know, going back to Arrowhead and Helldivers for just a second, I was telling Donovan how stupid it's been that I have on a couple of occasions been like, you know, I enjoy this game. I should just buy the new War Bond with money because I didn't buy the game. Yeah. I was like, I've just been bumming Chris's and enjoying the game. And I was kind of like, yeah, you know, I could do that. But every time I'm like, yeah, but I could just go get super credits from the game. And I've bought everything that I've bought with super credits from ones I earned in missions, which I love. But then I thought to myself, I was like, wait a minute. I did buy the game. I bought the game for fucking Donovan because I believed in the game so much. I was just like, here, I'll buy the game for you. Have fun. So it's in that sense, it's like, yeah, I did my due diligence. A copy that probably wouldn't have gotten sold got sold, and Donovan did end up loving the game. Look at that. We did good.
Well, I went to this. I'm sorry. I went to this guy, the team's website. They're owned by Devolver now.
Oh shit!
And they make the last game they made is Stronghold Definitive Edition.
Okay, there you go. Can you still go walk in and try? They're still there.
I gotta go check, but I think they moved. Doesn't say where they are in their website anymore.
Well, there you have it. Maybe they just got big enough where they're like, got to keep all these fans from walking through our front doors.
Dude, it's one of those things where it's in a plaza that I've never been in with a bunch of weird stores. It's such a weird spot for like what seems to be a relatively large video game studio.
Yeah, I guess.
Hey, listen, and Insomniac Games follows them, so that's pretty freaking big to me.
Big enough, right? All right, Chris, moving on to the next thing we got here. April's PlayStation Plus Essential Games are now available to claim. The month's titles are Immortals of Avium, a game that I championed a lot. Now, with that in mind, set your expectations. I'm not saying it's the next fucking Elden Ring. It's a solid first game from a studio that shook up a lot of the things that are going on in the industry right now, and I appreciated that. So, as much as it's unfortunate because it means that game will probably never be able to turn around enough sales to ever go anywhere, that's fine. I'm okay with a one-and-done game. But hopefully that at least means that some of the people who clowned on it without ever playing it will just try it free of any kind of commitment other than a few hours to see if you get into it. And I'd be curious to see if opinion on this game turns around or not. You know, sometimes I'm just wrong in terms of broad public opinion. So, be curious to see if I get some vindication here, or if I'm just if I just like a game that most people still don't like. It's possible.
This is Immortals is your balloon arch.
Who knows, man? You never know what's going to happen. Minecraft Legends and Skull, the Hero Slayer, are the three games for the essential games. So remember, that's bottom tier of PS Plus. You can grab those now. Minecraft Legends, I haven't played. Very curious to see it as well. But Minecraft Dungeons was great, so I'm hoping that them, you know, going out and about again gives me something to do. Something I do want to talk about, part of the reason I haven't played as many games is that I bought my daughter a PlayStation 4, and that has been a process. They are very expensive used.
Really?
And I'm surprised. They're like 219, 230, depending on which one you want. And I happen to be, you know, that the Walmart we went to when you came and visited in Ashdown, you know, about 20 minutes out of town. We were there looking for Yu-Gi-Oh cards. We just decided to do it on card night. And they had the Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 PS4 Slim bundle, and it was marked down to 250. And I was like, I'd rather spend $20 more and get a never used system with a new controller that I know is legit and everything. And so I just bought it because she had been asking for one for about 4 months now. So I got it, set it up, and there are a lot of really in-depth options that you can do with parental controls. But let me also tell you how fucking frustrating they are, because I can't figure out what setting I need to change to allow Roblox to show up, but it won't. it won't let her open YouTube. Or it wouldn't, because I had to go in and basically just make her account free to do whatever she wants for her to be able to open YouTube. And the reason that pisses me off is that she can log into YouTube, and YouTube already has age restrictions that are set. Yeah. So we made her an email. We set what she can and can't watch on YouTube. Why the fuck does PlayStation need to stop YouTube from being able to be opened? That's the part that was like, this is so fucking annoying, because she's like, well, I have a TV in my room now, and she's 8. So she's excited and she wants to be able to watch YouTube videos in her room instead of in the living room. And so, you know, I'm trying to oblige and let her have that. And dude, I was just so fucking frustrated constantly having to go and log in and change. It's incredibly annoying.
I bet.
And I was disappointed, because as I was looking through it, people were like, it is pretty much better to just make them a normal ass account and let it go. And damn, after all the shit that I did, it's basically where we are. For me to for YouTube to be able to open, because PlayStation 4 treats it as a game, they treat it as a game that's 17 and older. They treat it as a mature game. So I had to go to her account and take all the age restrictions I had put on off and have it to where she can play games that are mature or higher. I had to not restrict it at all, basically, for her to be able to get in.
You would think they would fix that.
Either they don't care, or someone's bitched at them for the wrong thing. But I was really surprised. But with that said, it was beneficial to know that since neither of us are on PS4 anymore, I was able to make her PlayStation 4 my primary PS4, and she can play all my games. So she's been playing Minecraft and all these other things. So it's been cool. She's been having the cousins come over and play Minecraft and play other stuff. I'm trying to get Roblox for it. She wanted to be able to play Roblox with a controller, and I'm so proud, because she's getting so good at using a controller. And like, even my wife is really bad with 3D games and a controller. Like, she's fine with 2D games, but the moment that you pull that right analog stick and you've got to whoop the camera around, she's pretty iffy. Yeah, she's good with fixed camera games.
when is your, because this is like a nerd thing, right? When are you going to do the, hey, you should try to play Kingdom Hearts?
Oh, we started.
But when is about a month ago. Are you playing it, or is she playing it?
She's playing it. I'm watching her.
Okay.
But now that she has her own PS4 instead of my PS5, we're going to restart on her TV, on her PlayStation, with her account, so that she can do it. It sounds crazy. Like, my daughter earned her first trophy for killing a cow.
You feel a little weepy-eyed when...
I do. She was... I heard her through the... Because, you know, her room's on the back side of the game room. Yeah. So the wall where her bed is exactly on the opposite side of where the couch is for me when I'm playing games. And I hear her, once I get Minecraft going and set up, I hear her and my niece playing. And then suddenly I hear her go, oh, I got a trophy! I got cow tipper! and then she got like two more trophies in like the next 3 minutes, and she was just losing her shit. She thought it was so cool. And that's nice.
You're raising a trophy hunter.
I might be raising a trophy hunter. We'll see if that holds true, but at the very least, she's excited by it, and she's excited by gaming. So that's really fun. There's something to be said about kids' unabashed just like excitement over things.
Yeah.
Yeah,
one day you're going to walk into to her room. She's going to be set up like me with a fucking trophy guide on one monitor and the PS5 over here. You'd be like, oh my God, I never should have done that podcast. But I was asking because I was thinking of that moment, right, where like for me it would be like like sitting down and be like, this is Fallout 3. Enjoy.
Yes.
Let me know when it stops running properly and I'll fix it.
Yeah. No, so when we started Kingdom Hearts, she sat down. I gave her the controller. She chose which of the, you know, the beginning of Kingdom Hearts 1, you've got to choose an attribute that you want to boost and one you want to give up. So she chose the sword and gave up magic. you know, she chose the sword and gave up the wand, so she's got better hit, you know, strength, and she's got lesser magic attack point, you know, whatever you want to call it, magic stats. And she went through and did all the opening questions where it's like, you know, what are you afraid of most? What do you want to do when you get older? Whatever the questions are in that game. And she beat the first heartless boss that's in the thing. She got to the second side of the island. So she's about to where the island will go off, but she's going to restart on her own PlayStation. But she was so excited. She's like, whenever Kyrie comes on screen, she's like, that's me. It's cute.
It's going to be great because I'll have that same experience because I'm planning on naming my kid Wastelander. So
let's go.
Or Vault Dweller, one of the two. We haven't decided yet.
Vault Dweller. His middle name's Dweller. His first name's Vol.
Yeah, I like that.
Vault Dweller. anyway, so that's cool. But I brought that up because, you know, I was thinking about Minecraft Legends and how that ties back in around to her being excited to play Minecraft. And what I was also excited about is like just giving the reins to her. We play Minecraft every now and then as a family, right? We'll sit down and play. And she decided with my niece to not play creative.
Wow. Okay.
So she hopped into a survivor world. She did do it to where there's no hostile mobs, but she still has to eat. She still has to get all the materials to build what she wants. And it was kind of interesting hearing her in there, like prioritizing what she wanted to build what, and then them helping each other. And it's just, it's a cool thing. Cause like when we first started, it was like, I just want to make it easy so she can get used to the controls and everything. And so we did creative, and that's fun because you can just get to make whatever you want, but it's a very big jump to go to where she can die.
Yeah.
You know, she has to work towards the things. So it's exciting. And I'm glad to see that she's so excited about it. And I'm curious to see how she continues to build on it. But, you know, it's cool. every parent who likes any hobby, if your kid shows any interest in your hobby, you try not to push it on them, but you try to be like supportive. And so it's just like, okay, hold off.
See, it's very philosophical, right? But I've always wondered, like, if one of my kids just sits with me and watches the Red Sox games from when he's a baby to an adult, and one of them I always have with me when I'm playing video games, are they predisposed to now one of them is a baseball player and one of them plays video games?
It doesn't mean for sure, but they are predisposed to it. There's a much higher chance that they'll like it because it's what you're around. And I think that, you know, we sometimes underestimate how much that plays a point on us. But like, if I'm being honest, I play games because my dad played games and introduced us to games at a very early age, formative ages, you know, playing Chuck Rock 2, Son of Chuck, and fucking Booger Man on Genesis when I was young. And then playing Crash Bandicoot when I was like, you know, five. So going through all that, it's funny though, because I got more into gaming than my dad ever did.
Yeah.
But because of him doing it with me, it started the itch. And then as he started to get out of it, as he got older, he's still mildly into the idea of it, but he doesn't play very often. So it's just interesting to see. And, you know, I'm into a lot of the music I'm into was a big start because of him, because, you know, he would listen to Godsmack and Disturbed and all these different things. And I just hear him and I'm like, fuck yeah, this is cool. Drowning Pool. And then, you know, it's like stuff starts to kind of come together. Cause like the Dragon Ball Z movies that were being dubbed over here when we were kids, Funimation did never used the Japanese music for their movies. They always redubbed them with voice and music. And so they had some of the craziest music where it's like fucking Deftones and Drowning Pool and Disturbed. And you're just like, and Pantera, and you're like, I don't know what the fuck this is doing in Dragon Ball Z, but it's sick. Yeah. And it's funny because it's like I already had been exposed to that, and so I gave more into it because other things that I liked were starting to kind of cross-sect with that. And then I remember when Prince of Persia Warrior Within had Godsmack on the commercials and then in the opening of the game, and you're just like, I don't know what the fuck's going on, but all my hobbies are coming together right now. Because, you know, my dad also was like a big classic rock fan, so it's like we listened to which is like Van Halen and Stone Temple Pilots and stuff a lot. So I like a lot of those songs, but it's funny. I don't listen to that stuff on my own as often. Like I can hear it and I appreciate it, but you can tell where it's like he introduced me to a lot of stuff. And then I just veered off in the direction I found the most interesting. And much like gaming, my dad was into heavier music for his time. And I'm into heavier shit than he'd ever imagine. And that's just, you know, it's interesting how you kind of bifurcate. But it's also interesting what parent you go along with. I mean, I'm a boy, so I guess maybe it makes a little more sense that I was drawn to what my dad was doing. Because, like, my mom really liked country music, and I just don't. You know?
Come on, that's, man, like, step your game up. Country bangs, dude. If it bangs, it bangs.
I'm not even really value judging country right now. I just don't ever listen to it. I don't really have a want to. But it's interesting because I understand the connections that people are like, well, I like country because of this, this, and this. And definitely when it's not like pop country or stadium country, but rather, you know, older country that's like sad. I'm like, yeah, I listen to sad boy shit all the time. I get it. That's just not the sad boy shit I listen to. Yeah,
Lil Peep is just country but music.
I can appreciate it in a way. Yeah. They all share a core. It's just me expressing my emotions with the proclivities of the lifestyle I live.
Yeah, it's pickups, trucks, and women, or Xanax and women. It's one of the two. Those are your genres of country music.
Yeah, or, you know, if you want to look at, like, emo stuff, it's, you know, it's like fucking painted nails and bangs and...
and Gillette.
And then metal, you have like that subsect of metal where it's all just like fucking motorcycles and motorcycles and women that make you sad and give you and relief. Yeah.
And then there's Elton John.
And then there's Elton John. Yeah. So, all right, moving on into the next thing we have here. Speaking of PS Plus, there are two games that will be launching directly into the PlayStation Plus catalog. Those games being Dave the Diver and Tales of Kenzaru Zao, which, if I'm not mistaken, was the game that they showed at the Game Awards last year, if I recall correctly, with the guy. It's all inspired by African folklore and stuff. Looks really great. It's another It's another Metroidvania. So Tales will launch on April 23rd for extra and premium members. The same goes for Dave the Diver, which launches a week earlier on April 16th. So if you are at the extra tier or above, you got some extra day one goodness. And I like when games do this. And it's why I've often understood why people love the idea of big, stupid, expensive AAA games hitting subscription services day one. But I think it makes way more sense for a game of this of these sizes to hit these services day one.
I agree.
This feels way more in line with the budgets and that they can afford to do this, and the game can still see success outside of this. So I'm excited by this, and you know, I try not to be a hypocrite and say like I still would I like Sony to put them on day and date for their big games. I mean, I would definitely benefit from it. But if the long term meant that Sony couldn't keep making games that I enjoyed because they had to stop because they were blowing money, then no, it's not what I want. This is just delayed gratification at this point. By not having them put them on day and day, I get to, in the long term, benefit from the fact that they keep making certain level of games that I enjoy. Whereas Microsoft makes a lot of great games, but if we're being honest, their output has really shrunk in terms of how much you may view it as AAA in the same vein as Sony. And that's not a bad thing at all. I think a lot of the games they're putting on their service day one look really good. I just think it goes to show that they were even like, yeah, it makes sense that we would need to scale our games back a bit to be able to do this. And it checks out.
I would agree. Yeah.
Yeah. This is cool though. I mean, I think both of these games look good. Chris, you can finally get back into Dave the Diver with the Platinum.
Dave!
You going to get it?
Hell
you
yeah.
Get the Platinum?
I was going to buy the game day one, so now I'm not going to do that and still get it. So it's great.
But are you gonna actually dive in for the
Platinum? Hell yeah, dude. I'm dying to play it right now, but I just would rather wait, play it on the big screen.
I feel you. Feel you indeed. Yeah, I'm real curious on that Tales of Kenzaru or Kenzaru, whatever. I think the difference there is that Dave the Diver joining, it's a game that's a known quantity from elsewhere. This other one is a new game across the board, kind of like we saw with Chia. So this is cool. I think it's a good pull. There's a quick Helldivers 2 thing that Chris put in here. It's just some quick updates about what's going on with it. They're adding blizzards and sandstorms. They're increasing the level cap for the game. So if you've hit the level cap of 50, you can keep going. Now it's 150. There's a lot of tweaks and bug fixes. Hopefully a lot of them that are very, very definitely needed. The game has gotten worse for me the more I've played. Every time I log in, it completely changes my armor, my rank, or my title card, my guns, fucking my emotes, everything that it can change, it changes. And I have to reset my entire dude up every single time I log in. That's very annoying. So yeah, little bit by little bit, they continue to push this game. And 150 is a big level cap push. I assume that means that they're about to start introducing some pretty wild new stratagems. And I have a really sneaking suspicion that they're preparing for the first vehicle to be added to the game.
I would probably agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's pretty cool. I don't have a whole lot more to say about that. Helldivers just does continue to do a good job of updating itself and pushing the players to do things that they otherwise weren't doing, like noticing that too many people were playing playing bugs, so just completely being like, yeah, fuck you, all the major orders and minor orders are going to be bot related now.
Yeah.
Yep. So that's been interesting to see. The final thing we have here is going back to the Jim Ryan. So the era Jim Ryan has ended, and we have entered the Hiroki Totoki era. I still love that name. Ryan noted on his way out that the PS5 is on track to be their most successful console, while also saying the PS2 sold 160 million units. Hopefully Jim enjoys retirement and flying a little bit less. I think it was so interesting for him to slip in the PS2 sold, because it's just been at 150 plus million forever. They've never bothered to say anything more. Why did they need to? No one was getting close to it. But I think Sony really wanted to be like, as the Switch approaches the potential to steal this, we really need to set in stone where we are. Because it sounds like a weird thing, but there really is something to be said about being able to have the honor of being the company that has the best-selling console of all time. It is a good marketing stick. And you best believe that if they were having a rough time, that they would go out and be like, buy the PlayStation 5. It's from the maker of the best-selling console ever, the PS2. And everyone loves the PS2. It's like one of the most beloved systems ever, because everybody has various memories with it in so many different ways, because people made millions of games about any fucking thing for the PS2. And it was really a wild time. So I think that's pretty cool. But looking at PS5 and him talking about being the most successful console, success is such a weird thing to measure, right? And one of the things we noticed about Game Pass and subscription services is that the measure for success that we've often relied on has changed a lot. So in looking at him saying this, what do you think he's specifically talking to here? Do you think he's talking sheer numbers and that this is a console we can see surpassing PS2? Or do you think it's going to be more of a, we made more money across the life of the console than any other console with the PS5? Which I think, numbers-wise, looking at it right now, they're definitely, they've continued to do all generation. So what are you thinking here?
I mean, I don't think it's going to hit PS2. So I think for all... the way I would just read it as like, yeah, it's the one we made the most money on. It seems that simple. And I would almost wonder if he would take into account, given COVID too, it really was the most successful console launch they've ever had.
Yeah. You know,
that plays into it very well. So listen, man, I don't think it is, but it's very easily a shot at Microsoft, where it's like, yeah, the PS5 killed the Xbox. It is our most successful console to date. You know, there's tons of ways you could look into it. The reality is, it's probably just, hey, we made the most money on this one.
Yeah, for sure. You know, you brought up Xbox for a second, and kind of in line with this ideology that's going on here, one of the things that came out recently, and I don't have the article in front of me, so I might be misquoting a little bit, but basically, Phil Spencer went on to say, and it's been referenced, and I wish I'd actually looked at the original. So this is secondhand information, looking at different things that people have said, different articles. But there was an article that had mentioned that Phil Spencer was saying that the reason that they've expanded out is because the next, you know, the current generation, what is that, Gen Z? Whatever, the low gen.
Alpha, I think.
I'm trying to think of what we are. Either way, whatever the generation that they're most worried about trying to capture, like, we're still important to them, but I get it. They're always trying to capture the next generation, because that will be the generation that continues to grow. And eventually you'll run the well dry if you don't keep trying to capture a new section of the market that can grow with you. And eventually there's a decent chance, and I think it tracks out, that people eventually do age out of gaming sometimes. You know, it depends on how into gaming you are, but there are people that age out. So as people age out and don't want to do it anymore, you have to make sure you have a new group of people that are going to grow up with it. And they'll eventually age out and you just keep going with the cycle. But they talked about that exclusives are really hard to do because that generation doesn't like exclusives. And I guess I kind of get it because, you know, it feels weird to say because we're not that far removed from these generations. You know, I'm 30. I'm arguably 12 years older than the people they're talking about, but there is a world of difference between me and that those people, as weird as that is to say. And you know, you look at a lot of these games that are popular right now, and when you look at how online driven everything is, people not wanting to play the same story driven games that we've always loved and being a little more okay with everything being online and being sociable and growing up in an environment where social media has existed from the moment they were born. I kind of get where a new generation would look at this and go, why would we want a game to only be available on one platform? I want to play it with all my friends everywhere at all times. And that's so foreign to me, because I don't even want to play online games that much. And so it was interesting hearing that, because it's very easy to view it as, what do people say, copium or whatever. It's very easy to view it as an excuse as to why they were unable to do something that Sony's still arguably been pretty reasonably able to do, with the caveat that even Sony has relented on the fact that eventually their games will come to PC. Seemingly very few games will stay truly exclusive forever unless the game just doesn't do well enough to warrant the development time and money to try and make a PC version. But with that in mind, you think about that. It's like, so it's easy to see that. But at the same time, it's easy to understand where they're actually coming from. When you are the underdog and you're trying to find a way to get people in, the way for Microsoft to actually make sure they make money at this point is not to try and convince these new people who are willing to spend money with them to buy Xbox and only Xbox. The best way is to go, no, just buy our games and spend money on our games. You want to buy Sea of Thieves on PlayStation? Fuck it. We'll make the money off the $40 ship we sold you. And that seems so weird to what I'm used to. But it does kind of allow me to give a little bit of grace to Microsoft in understanding how they've reached their conclusion, even if at the end of the day, I think it's also fair for anyone to say, like, yeah, Microsoft lost. But that's okay, because they lost the battle for who's number one. They didn't lose the battle of who's making money, because Microsoft seems to be making money, or at least aiming to make money. So what do you think there, Chris? I mean, do you buy into that at all, or do you think this is just a way to save face?
Yeah, my take is that it's scope. And it's not even really, no, it's shit talking a little bit, but Ratchet and Clank sold almost 4 million units. Spider-Man, what was it, 10 million? Mm-hmm. Spider-Man 2 is selling very
well. Spider-Man 2. No, Spider-Man 1 and Miles Morales are like, I'm probably going a little high, but it's like 30 to 50 million units just for those two games.
There you go. 30 to 50 million units of two PlayStation exclusives. 4 million PlayStation exclusive. I don't know how much Spider-Man 2 sold, but I'd be willing to bet 5 million.
It broke 10 million.
Spider-Man 2?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
There you fucking go. 10 million, and you're trying to sit here and look at me. Helldivers 2 has supposedly sold like over 5 million copies. 10 million for Helldivers 2?
I'm pretty sure that they were saying that they're tracking towards 10 million right now. I think that they're at 8 million total.
So, multiple exclusives.
I can confirm that Spider-Man 2 has hit 10 million.
Yeah. We know Final Fantasy 16 did 3 million units. We don't know what 7 has done yet. I think 7 Remake sold 10. I think that's what
7
I read.
Remake did pretty well. Yeah.
I mean, I'll say it's, you know, COVID year, but still, you know, so I think that's just full on cope. And it's one of those where I read it and I'm like, how does he even take himself seriously when he says something like this? And it's not that it's not true, but it looks like
Remake. This is Wikipedia. This is very quick, but it looks like it sold at least 7 million.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. I want all my games everywhere too, but people understand the reality. The problem is everyone chose PlayStation. So yes, they don't want their Xbox games to be exclusive to Xbox because they have a PlayStation. It's not the same from the other side. So I think that's something that needs to be recognized when you say something like that.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But I think that there's also the reality that he's in a position where he does have to try and explain why his company isn't where the other one's at. And now that's sure. a problem, because I mean, the reality is there will only ever be one biggest company. That is the reality. One person will win. And arguably, there's a very reasonable argument that Nintendo is actually the winner of that. But they're so weird and secretive with their money, and they're a weird company to gauge. So at least from the ones that we can gauge, PlayStation has earnestly beat them in the more day-to-day games market than Nintendo's more niche specialty market that they've been able to, you know, breed throughout the years.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like how it's Epic doing probably fine. Sure. Is all these other things doing fine? Yeah. But at the end of the day, Steam is still the top PC games platform. It just is. And there can only be one. That's just the way it works. Either Steam was going to hold on to it or one was going to lose. And it's really hard to lose momentum in that route. You know, it's really hard, as you've often said, Chris, it's really hard to build a digital library somewhere and just want to forsake it.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting how pliable you become, even with policies that you may not like, because you have too much invested, both time, effort, energy, money.
Yeah. Well, that's the, you know, we joked about Blake a while ago with the PlayStations, but it's one of the things that I respect. He was like, I don't like the Xbox decision, so I sold my Xbox and bought a PlayStation. And I'm like, oh, well, you just left all your shit there. Congrats. Good. That's respectable. I couldn't do that.
Yeah, it's rough. I mean, and I respect it too. I mean, I know it's there for if or when he eventually goes back, one of the two. Yeah. And I don't mean that in a derogatory sense. It's just, yeah, if he goes back, he'll still have a wealth of games that he bought previously. That account continues to exist as long as Xbox and Microsoft continue to exist and want to support it. So with that in mind, it's like, it's both a really big decision to step away, but it's also a not completely unreturnable one, because even if you step away, you can find your way back, and then you still be like, well, I still have all the money and time I spent here and the effort and the trophies and all these things. So if I choose to go Xbox and it turns out that it's really not doing it to me, I can still come back to PlayStation. But it does create a much higher barrier for you, and it'll reach the point to go, fuck it, I'm going to the competition.
Yeah.
And that's hard. That's where psychology of consumer behavior comes into a big play. And, man, we could say it till the cows come home, but going towards and pushing more and more and more for a digital library to become the standard in a generation where you were not poised to win was a strategic error for Microsoft, because it was a high risk, high reward. And unfortunately, they got some reward from it, but not enough. And it's interesting to see. So at this point, I think Microsoft's just happy to make money, right? So if they can get their stuff on as many platforms as possible, be exclusive where it still makes sense to be exclusive, support where it makes sense to support, I think they're just wanting to get to a point where they're not bleeding money.
What is the point of staying exclusive at this point, really, though?
Now, you mean for Xbox, right? Or do you mean at large?
No, for Xbox.
Yeah. I still think that they want to make the most money they can from people buying Game Pass on, you know, paying for Game Pass, which is a direct thing, right, buying their games on their system, buying the different, like, for their games that are games as a service, buying the ships and all the different cosmetics and microtransactions on their system, because they get the most money from it.
Sure.
So as many people as you can get to stick in there, you're still going to get more money from your own ecosystem. And if you completely do away with exclusives, there's a very real reality where everyone does what you did and what Blake did. And it's less surprising that you did it, because you're a PlayStation fan who happened to have an Xbox for moments when you felt like you needed one. It's a lot more surprising for Blake, who was very big into Xbox. He has bounced around back and forth between PlayStation and Xbox, but he has a very big Xbox lean and did for a long time. And he decided off of these decisions to be like, nah, fuck it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a calculated move, and you got to hope that less people jump ship than, you know.
It's just, to me, I would argue that it's not the way that everything is looking. It's not better for them to release on their console, because it's, yes, 100% of 1 million microtransactions is great, but
sure,
70% of 15 million is a lot better.
Yeah, it's a numbers game at the end of the day. And I still think we're going to see them do what Sony's done with PC, just go the extra mile and have Sony be like, yeah, we've reached what we can realistically get on PC or on our platform for this. And we used it as a sales boon because, you know, if you can play Spider-Man 2 here now, there will be people that will just go, fuck it, I'm going to buy a PlayStation 5 and start buying my games on there. So they get that benefit. But then eventually for the people that are not going to make that choice, they can double dip to any degree on PC and get a couple more million sales, as tended to be their thing, you know, 1 to 2 more million sales, which undoubtedly pays for the cost of porting the game at that point. So if you look at it from that standpoint, I think that's what Microsoft will do. I think that there's a... I see both sides. I see a very clear way for Microsoft to be like, no, we are going to keep Starfield exclusive forever. And we'll subsidize that by having our games that have microtransactions be on more platforms. But I could also very reasonably see we've gotten what we're going to get out of Starfield at this point. So Starfield's going to PlayStation in a year, you know?
So to me, if it was me, I would be like, listen, every Game of the Year edition is on PlayStation because it's just like how many
gut that makes check, sense. Have it many, until you get ready for Game of the Year and then go the Game of the Year edition releases everywhere.
Right. Yeah. Like how many sales of Starfield do you think would happen on PlayStation tomorrow? Releases tomorrow.
Tomorrow, it's probably 2.5 million day one.
Right.
That's a lot.
That's look, we're just having a conversation, but that's more than it sold on Xbox, probably. At least close to it, like in one day. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. You told me that did 10 million. I would believe you. They thought it would do 10 million. So it just goes back. Well, they thought it'd
do 10 million total. So yeah, that's a fair point. But I think day one, they could get 2 million, 2.5.
Yeah. So to me, it seems, again, the most money is coming here. So all of this conversation for me to advocate for Microsoft and Sony needs to just start playing nice. Games come to our console or the PlayStation console. Game Pass is over here. You know, hey, you want this boutique experience, you can do it here. And then now that we're all playing Kumbaya, we go to Arc System Works and get PlayStation versus Xbox.
Why not? That way we can have a Helgen fighting off against a Spartan.
Dude, A Helgen fighting against like a Arbiter, dude. Yeah. Hell yeah, Marcus Venus versus Donut Drake
fighting off against the Locust. Yeah,
dude, come on, an ODST versus a Helldiver. That was easy. That was set up for you.
Oh, I know, but I wanted to do something a little more interesting.
A Terminid versus a Locust. That would have been there.
Look. Yeah, all this is, all ODST versus a Helldiver is just when they fucking do that thing in every beginning superhero movie where they go, oh no, it's the person with the same powers but evil. Which is seldom an actually interesting villain in my opinion. Most of those suck. I hate those.
If they made a full-on Xbox versus PlayStation crossover that, like, let's go full out with this. We're spending $100 million on this game. It's written by Blake J. Harris. He's doing this like the characters are playing through a facsimile of the console war. And then it ends with just a boss fight between Phil Spencer and Hiroki Totoki. I would play that game. I would buy that game. I'm going to pitch that game.
See, this is what, you know, people have been wondering, what would South Park's next game be? South Park's next game needs to be the episode where they did the console wars across a couple of episodes. And it was like the dude from Microsoft going to try and kill the president of Sony and like them trying to battle off each other. Fuck it. Go that route. I'm pretty sure you can get away with parody.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I would. Yeah. The X Station versus the Playbox. Ooh, no, Playbox.
I don't even know.
A bit, but
I don't know if they can't just actually have the name in there because like, the Stick of Truth had the fucking Taco Bell KFC or whatever the fuck it was.
That's true.
So it's like, fuck it. At this point, you can just have the real name for certain things in there. It just depends on if you want to make fun of it or just reference it, you know?
Exactly.
So, you got any questions? Well, look, we do have one question in particular that we got. Let me double check on Twitter, but I don't remember seeing any on there. Busy time of the year, so it is what it is. We got two questions, actually, that we're going to go to. So, The first one comes from Jehudi MD, one of our longtime listeners, longtime patrons. And it's one we didn't get to the previous episode because we needed to cut out early. So sorry about that. He says, and this is a long question, Chris, so get ready. And I almost wonder if we should take it one at a time. I'm going to stop at the end of the first question mark and see if you want to do it that way. It says, first, assume you are a single person with no one in your life that is important to you, and consider this scenario.
Jesus. Okay.
While all-out World War III is happening across everywhere on Earth, your doorbell rings at 2 a.m., and you notice a huge package left by the front door. You open it, and it reveals a one-way time-use time machine for only one occupant, no space left to take anything or anyone with you. Would you use it? First question.
Maybe.
Man, okay. I think it's really easy to want to go yes because all out World War III is happening. And I think there'd be a really strong push to either go into the future and roll the dice and hope it's gotten better, or to at least go back into the past where you know it was better.
It's a one-time use time machine?
One-time use. But you lose, so you leave everything behind. But in this scenario, you don't have a wife or a child. So.
See, it's one of those things because it follows Avengers time travel in a way. If it's a one-time use, it follows like we've made a branching path.
Okay.
And I feel like what you do, if you do take it, is you go back in time and mentor yourself. Because you're not changing your past. You're changing this version of you's future, which may prevent World War III. But again, what's the point of a one-time time machine?
I think that would be it. I actually think you've landed on what the benefit would be, is that maybe you could use it to stop World War III from ever happening.
But
the other benefit is, look, play a quick math game. Here we are, World War III. So what were we saying? This is while all that World War III is happening. So let's assume this is right now. Okay, we'll assume that this is right now. World War III breaks out this year. We're in the middle of it. This happens. I can very clearly be like, I'm 30. Mm-hmm. If I go back in time and I just go to where I think I'll live to be 70, 80, go 40 years in the past where I know what the events are and I know that they're reasonably able to be survived. I'm older than any draft age. I'm going to go back to the 80s.
I don't think that's a good idea.
But do you see what I mean? It's a, you'd be going back. I would at least see a reasonable thing for you to like be like, okay, I know what this is. I'm going to go back.
If there was,
because more I know it's a time period that I can survive, you know?
Yeah. But so if you were to go back and try and stop World War III, the problem with it being a one-time time machine is that you couldn't go back to your world.
Yeah. And it's funny because you talked about it that way. You can never really – the problem with Avengers time travel is that it requires for you to not fuck up the timeline that you're trying to save. It requires right. you to be able to go back in the past. And this is actually my problem with that movie. We've talked about it ad nauseum. But the problem with that movie is that it specifically requires you to go back and put all these puzzle pieces back in place so that you don't splinter off and just create another timeline, another timeline, another timeline. And yet the movie does exactly that by pretending that despite going back to a different timeline, which would have caused a splinter, and staying in the past, that Captain America, it's impossible for him to be on that bench in that timeline with the way they described their own time travel. And
unless he was always there, but whatever. It's I get what you're saying. Free will doesn't exist.
I'll give you this. If it wasn't clearly implied by the movie that that was the same one that went in the past, that would be the difference. If it was just that in this timeline, all the way around this had happened, that's impossible, realistically, for the way they set it up too. Because the moment you go back and anything changes, it creates a branch. And the only way to stop the branch is to go back and put back the thing that you originally changed. So
all you're telling me is that Avengers Endgame is an anti-free will movie. Because sure. the implication of the movie, no, well, the implication of the movie is that he always, this point in time always happened, and he was always in the 40s, which means there were always two captains, which means free will doesn't exist because it's already happened in the Avengers.
There you go, Chris. So there back to the question at hand.
Yeah.
We've determined, so you won't use it.
I
or
like
at least you don't think you would.
I like where your head's at. I think if it was me, this would be like a, okay, I'm going to take this inside and I'm going to prepare and I'm going to go back, kill my former self and stop World War
II. Take on his life?
Yeah. Like that would be my mission.
That's big ambitions, Chris. I mean, I got to applaud you for that. But I would just be like, I want to keep living sense, without this dude. Strife, you know?
But dude, I don't think you as a modern man could go back to the 80s.
Maybe not.
I think you think you could, and then you realize that your TV has three channels.
Yeah.
And you can only play Pong.
Yeah.
I don't think there's
okay,
this
but Chris,
weird.
Hold on. You're completely missing the other side. First of all, I already enjoy playing some old games, right?
So
going
so
back,
I
would still enjoy playing those. Okay, let's go back in. I get to experience the hype of Sonic.
Oh, fuck off.
At a time where I couldn't have. I get to understand the hype around Crash Bandicoot as an adult that I had my version of hype as a kid. So my point, I get to experience the hype of Final Fantasy I coming out and people being like, bro, what the fuck is this?
Right, and you get to almost die during Rebirth. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, because I've already played Rebirth. So if it's happening right now... I'm good, except for the fact that arguably there's almost no way I would live long enough, and even if I did, I wouldn't be probably dexterous enough with a controller to be able to play the third and final installment in the 7 remake trilogy.
Right. How are you going to see what happens next?
Chris, I can fix all the lapses in my game knowledge by playing them as they're coming out.
I only feel like you take a one-time time machine if your goal is to prevent World War III.
I'm gonna pitch another option real quick before you. I think it's reasonable to just be hopeful and be like, the reason I'm taking the time machine is I don't want to live through the strife that comes with being involved in a world war and the potential for you to die at any moment or be drafted at any moment or whatever it be, right? What if you're just hopeful and you go, you know what? I don't want to relive the past. I'm hopeful that that this will resolve and there'll be a better future, as I think most people would agree has happened after the previous world wars in the long run, you know, after so many times. So I think you just kind of go, send me 20 years in the future. I want to see.
You were actually butting up against exactly what I was going to say, where it's like, actually, the real option is I'm going to just go forward. But again,
skip it all.
How forward is safe?
It's a bet no matter what. It's a gamble. It's a, you don't know, but you know, I think 20 years is pretty safe.
Here's the scariest thing that could happen. What if you're like, fuck it, I'm going to be super safe and go 200 years in the future. And the time machine just goes, no data for this entry or something like that.
Yeah. And you're like, oh no. And like, you used your only chance. And it's like, oh, you've used it. I couldn't go there, like, but we still...
You just pop out and you're just in the middle of the cold recess of space because Earth is gone.
Yeah. That's it. But that's what I mean. It's a gamble. But here's the thing. There's a pretty high chance in World War III that you're going to experience a lot of pain, strife, or maybe even death. So you're doing the same thing by just casting your lot into the future. That's why the past is such an easy one, because it's like, I know what the past is.
Yeah, I think I would go to the future. I think that's really
the best future
answer.
Like you said, the future deals with the fact that, though interestingly, if you jump too far, you do the same thing. You're a modern man. You're not a future man the sense of you go to the future and now you still don't know how to use any fucking thing, and you also can't use the shit you knew how to use. So you're just caught in the same loop.
Yeah, but
what the fuck do I do?
I think for us that jump is easier. Plus, you would be a celebrity.
Because you'd be the man that time traveled?
Yeah. Like, what was it like before the war? You would just be the protagonist of Fallout 4.
The question would be whether or not anybody would believe you, right? Just because there's a machine here doesn't mean that once it happens, people are like, fuck you. You didn't come from the past.
That's why you have to bring a newspaper with you.
See, but he says you can't bring anything else. There's enough room for you. There's arguably enough room your clothing.
For you. I can pocket a fucking newspaper or two.
Shove it in your asshole.
I'm not saying I need like a. But even basic shit would prove that, right? Because we're not at a time where it's like, oh, nothing. You're wearing, you jump how many years in the future are you jumping?
20.
You jump 20 years in the future, like.
They're like, bro, you got a Pixel Pro 8?
Well, exactly that. But like the jeans,
that thing's pristine.
The jeans you would be wearing would be like $300 pairs of jeans that are in museums.
For 20 years, Chris, I think you might be.
Dude, vintage jeans?
Yeah, vintage. Dude, Chris, I can buy jeans at the fucking Goodwill that are from 19 or from 2003. That's 20 years, Chris. 2004.
Whatever. All right. You get what I'm saying, though. Like,
for like $3.
There are certain items of clothing.
And they're back in style.
Fair. Okay. Whatever. You get what I was trying to say, though, where like there's an argument where even your cell phone is like.
Cell phone's a pretty good one.
If you popped out, if someone walked up to you with a fucking Apple One iPhone, I would believe them that they said they were a time traveler.
This poor man has suffered.
Like, dog, that doesn't even work
anymore. He has suffered 15, 16 years.
You still have the TV Instagram or TV YouTube thing.
They don't even have 3G towers anymore, my guy.
Dude, your shit's over. What's the next part of this question, dude?
All right. So assuming we're using it, which century would you move to? We've kind of answered that. And it's funny you go century. I don't think I'm looking at that big of a time scale. I don't want fucking cholera. Look, for real, though, I don't want to go back and get killed by a fucking Jack the Ripper or die of the plague. I'm not going to probably leave my century. I know what happens in my century, and it's relatively safe.
I think the most interesting thing for me would be to take the biggest bet of all. So here's what I'm doing. I am time traveling to Easter when Jesus was arisen. No, hear me out, because I think I have some solid logic. Okay?
All right.
If Jesus is a deity... Right. Because if you go back to that time, right, actually, I would go to like when the whole thing happened, right, and I would just see, you know, because I'm making a bet, right? So I got my first parlay is Jesus is on the cross. That's
big
the
bet,
first,
yeah.
That's the first leg of my parlay, right? The second leg of the parlay is
what if you overshoot it?
That motherfucker got up. You got time.
We don't know the exact date, right?
No, but I feel like you could kind of talk to the AI in the time machine.
Like, dude, can you go to the day that Jesus was on the cross, please?
Right. I'm going to assume there's like a Cortana or an Alexa in there. But think about it, right? So parlay two is, yo, he got out of the cave, right? So that to me right there goes, okay, this is a god. Which means he would recognize, right? You would have to think he would recognize that I'm not from that time.
Sure.
So then he takes an interest in me after, you know, he's come out of his cave. And we have a conversation. I tell him what happened. Now, my assumption is that because he is Jesus, he can send me back in time. So I have a conversation with Jesus, get a heavenly weapon to stop World War III. He sends me back in time, and I use the heavenly weapon to stop World War III. That's what I'm doing. So I'm taking that three-legged bet.
Hey, betting man.
On God. That would be the name of the movie. Betting on God.
Betting on God. That would probably wreck shop in theaters. And that's probably like a pretty low-budget movie, if I'm being real.
I would watch the shit out of that movie. Where it's like me just sitting at like a stone bar in Jerusalem, like, I hope this motherfucker gets up taking shots of fucking rancid ass wine.
But this shit sucks.
Barkeep.
He better come back or this wasn't worth it at all. Yeah,
exactly. It's a great plan if he does, though. So what's the next leg, though?
All right, so we keep going further down, and with that in mind, we have he kind of goes into where we got, which is like, would you go to the medieval century where manual skills are more important but are more likely to succumb to some infection or town raid, or would you move into the distant future where you aren't sure what will happen and likely be a post-apocalyptic wasteland? So beautifully optimistic here that the future is most likely post-apocalyptic.
So, in other words, we answered every question just by having a conversation.
More or less. But he goes, would you move 10 years in the past after Googling the past, winning lottery numbers, but be at the mercy of your other persona during that time? Or would you rather travel back in time and use your knowledge to rule and could end up being labeled a heretic because of your excessive knowledge?
See, the problem with this prompt is that... I love how thought
out this is.
Okay, hear me out, because I think I know the best thing to do. Right? You write yourself a note that says, do not take the time machine under any circumstances. Hear me out. You take your life savings, get in, cash it out. I don't give a fuck about his restrictions. We're cashing it out, even if it's in bonds. No matter what, we're taking our money and we're going back in time and investing the money, right? We're buying Apple stock. That's what we do. We buy our life savings in Apple stock. Kill yourself. No, right? But that's all you have to do. Because
okay, so Chris, hear me out. You've opened up a potential aspect here. You don't go at all. It says you can't put it. There's enough room for you, but you can't take anything else with you. So instead, you take all of your savings and you cash them out and you put them inside the time machine and you tell the time machine when to go and you just send it back.
Yeah, but that's not in a bank.
Well, look, here's a wrinkle that I actually didn't think about here, and this is important. He says, discuss also, what would you do if the machine will take you in time, but still stay in the same address where you are right now? Or if the time machine can take you places, where and what time would you travel? So it continues to go back. This is very real. Like, the house I'm in right now is a house I grew up in. I love this house. I could very easily do this, go back fucking 20 years and have a note for kid me that says invest this in Apple. And it would work and
sell it.
Yeah, it would work.
Yeah, because that's all. But here's the thing about
how does time travel work, because if it creates a branch like some people think, I'm not benefiting from that, but I at least know some distant version of me in an alternate world is. But if it's Back to the Future style, where I go where I send the money back to the past and then suddenly within like an almost instant, everything around me changes. And it's like, holy shit, my house is fancy as fuck. We've all got money and nice cars. I look outside the door. You know what I mean? That would be
I think
that'd be the question is, how does time travel actually function? We have a lot of guesses. Which one's more fun?
I think the Back to the Future one's
a lot more fun.
The Back to the Future is a lot more fun. But I think it does create a branching path. But the thing is, if all that you do is write a note and then send a letter the day after you took the trip, right? So you go on April 2nd, 2024, you take the time machine, you go back, you give yourself a note, hey, don't take the time machine. You go back, and then you send yourself a letter from the past with all the bank account numbers for your Apple investment. It doesn't really benefit you like this version of you, but it benefits the same version of you that went back. So all you did was just make yourself rich. I found the loophole. That's if I ever get a time machine, that's what I'm doing.
Jehudi, there you go.
And I'm going to send you a note when this happens and be like, don't let me take the fucking time machine. It'll work out perfectly. With my understanding of time, that's the perfect loophole.
I don't know. We'll have to see. There's a lot of questions about how time works, and that's why my general rule for time travel stories is that I don't give a shit what you tell me, because no one knows how time travel actually works. As long as you set a rule and you follow it, I don't give a shit. But most time travel stories do such a good job, and then right at the end, just to try and do something cool, they're like, ha, fuck the rules we set in place.
Yeah. Is that like, and did I you ever watch the movie Project Almanac? I think that was what it was called.
Mm-mm, I don't think so.
It was like this. I saw it in theaters for some reason. It was pretty good. It was a time, they do tend to stick to the time travel rules. Happy Death Day actually sticks pretty
Happy
well.
Death Day, Happy Death Day does stick pretty
even
well.
Even in the sequel, it's still.
I haven't seen it yet, but I was curious how they were going to approach it because of the fact that, you know.
They go exactly where you think they would. It's good. But
yeah, that's the thing about like that's the part that's so fun about Back to the Future, is that at least its time travel is consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's across all movies, they treat it the exact same. One of my things I love so much about Quantum Break is that the game's incredible, and I thought it handled time travel so fucking well for it to really change, and it tried so hard to focus on the elements of you can't do that, because if I never take the machine, I can't be here to tell you not to take it, and we create a paradox and it just can't work. And then at the end of it all, they fucking betray that entirely and imply that they did find a way to somehow completely go against everything that was said. And it pissed me off so fucking much. I still love that game, but I remember credits were about to roll. It's like the last couple sentences of the game. I was like, these motherfuckers stuck with it. Wow. And then there's a little fucking line that he says, and you're just like, I fucking hate you. You have completely shit every fucking thing that I spent this time through. So there we have it. The other question, Chris, is a lot simpler one, and it comes from another longtime listener, longtime patron, Mr. No Fate, or Sean One Neo, who went to patreon.com/Snartech and gave as little as $1 per month to support the show with more than just their time, which we are very thankful for. With that in mind, they took to Twitter to ask us, if the internet went offline forever, what would you miss the most? At first, he says he thought he would miss streaming movies and shows, but he says he still has DVDs. Then it hit him. He would miss podcasts.
Oh.
That's sweet. That's sweet.
That is pretty sweet.
He would miss us, Chris. That's the important part. I feel like I gave him abandonment issues because he sent this before we were supposed to do the episode last week. And then it's like whenever the therapist is like, oh, you have abandonment issues? Oh, I can't be your therapist anymore. What would you miss the most if the internet went away? It's so hard because it's like, how broad can I be? Because in a way, I share his answer. But if I were to
Google,
that's basically it. What I was gonna get at is, I would miss the wealth of information that you have at your fingertips. Yeah, because one of the things I just really like about the internet is its ability to just help you do all sorts of crazy shit. Like, yeah. I remodeled my bathroom whenever we moved in here before Kyrie was born because it was a terrible shape. This house is very old and I needed a better bathroom. And I only had $1,500. And spoiler alert, even in 2014, 15, whatever it was, no one's going to remodel your bathroom for $1,500. It's just not going to happen. So I had to figure out something I'd never done, how to drywall, how to plumb, how to fucking remove the shit that was in there, all of this. And I got it to gun. And it's not the best, but I did it for $1,500 and I got it done before my daughter was born. And it still holds up to this day. I want to redo it better as I've known more now. But that is so crazy to me that I was able to do that. I bought a Honda Grom. And the headlight wasn't working, and I was trying to convert it from an old incandescent bulb to an LED, which it did not have the setup for. And so I just looked up the wiring diagram, figured out which wire is considered the key on wire that tells it once the key turns on, you turn this on and keep it on. And I wired the LED headlight directly into that fucking plug, because that plug went to the back for the tail light, which was LED. And I was able to say, hey, use the same one to make this LED come on. And it works fucking flawlessly. And that's all because fucking the internet, like the internet's ability to just a lot of people look at it for entertainment, but its sheer ability to help with knowledge is insane. Think about what we're doing, Chris, and all the videos we have where we can look at for reference of people sharing, hey, if you're doing this, these are good things to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm.
That is freaking valuable,
dude. I like when I'm cooking, I'll just, I have an Apple Watch. I'll just hit how many gallons in a ocean. Immediately, I got an answer.
Yeah. Like,
it's, I could just do, it's, give me a cheesecake yeah. recipe.
Bam, bam, bam. Yeah.
Got it. Like I don't even have to use my phone. That would be the thing I would miss is just how convenient everything is. Could you imagine, Brett, could you imagine having to use a map?
Yes. And I do know how to.
I do know how to
because I grew up very poor and I had to be the one to help navigate while my dad was driving us to visit family because parents divorced real early. So go long ways. And so we'd be looking at the map and be like, where are we going? All right. You got to take this here. But it's been a long time. I'd be really slow and rusty at it. I would not be very efficient.
No. And that's the thing. It's like, I couldn't imagine half of my daily life without the internet, let alone Google. Like, yeah, I'd miss podcasts and YouTube videos and all of this kind of stuff.
Chris, I would miss you. I wouldn't even get to talk to you.
Yeah, we wouldn't even have a conversation.
I guess if it went away forever, I do have your phone number. I could call you.
You could call me, yes.
I could call you, but it'd be a lot different than the way we currently interact with each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Which is funny because I thought about that the other day where I've had your number this whole time and I don't think we've ever texted.
I think I texted you exactly once.
Yeah, just when I was in with you. That was the only time we've ever texted.
Yeah.
Interesting. I would miss Discord.
Weird.
I would miss Patreon, where I subscribe to my favorite podcasts, like ours.
Plug time. A good wrapping up spot for this episode. I can feel my voice starting to kind of fail me a little bit. So with that in mind, thank you to everyone who sent in any kind of questions. Thank you for listening to the show every week like you always do. We are ever so damn thankful for it. We appreciate you. With that in mind, like Chris said, you can head over to patreon.com/nartech and give as little as $1 per month to support the show, which works wonders. It allows us to pay for the service we use to record the podcast. It allows us to pay for the hosting services, all without having to dig into our own pockets, which makes it consistently more easy to be able to do this without having to bear all the weight of that on us. So with that in mind, we always shout out our patrons. And we start that off with Duh Overlord, Spencer, Brandon Edwards, Alex, Barry Rogers, Stingray X, Matt Tubbs, Easton 328, Aztec King, Leechion 69, The Lord Corgi, Bailey Robertson, Mark Schutz, Cypher Primus, Kyle Grimm, Rude Days 93, Kevin Bacon Bits, Danny Villiobos, Jehudi MD, No Fate, Josh Ayers, Derek Porter, Donovan Williams, Matthew Green, and Sean Santa Rude. Thanks to each and every one. See you next week.